Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. The South Dakota Council of Juvenile Services helps establish the state's policies for juvenile issues and funding. The council has elected a new chair. Beth O'Toole was appointed to her fifth three-year term by Governor Dennis Dugard in 2017. She's a professor of social science and criminal justice at the University of Sioux Falls. She joins us now in the SDPB studios at USF. Beth O'Toole, welcome. Beth O'Toole. Welcome.
Thanks. It's very good to be here.
All right. Give us a little idea of what this council actually does. What's it responsible for?
This council works as an advisory council to the governor, helping to set the policy for how we're... there's a federal formula grant, and so we help set policy for how that formula grant is administered within the state of South Dakota. Many of those dollars at this point go towards prevention and intervention for at the early stage of the juvenile justice process.
And as I understand it, 80% of that funding has to go toward a certain thing? I mean, are there limitations to what can be done with the money?
As with any federal grant, there are many limitations on how that money can be spent. And it would be very boring to go through all of the specific details there. But the money is used primarily at this stage to try to help kids at the very earliest signs that they have problems to stay out of the system.
What's the significance of that? How much of a difference does it make to keep people out of a system versus help them once they're in it?
I think any parent would tell you, if you can head off a problem before you actually end up in difficulty, that would be your ideal. And I think we look at it that way, that ideally we're going to take kids who have some sort of an issue, behavioral issues, whatever, school attendance issues, whatever they are, and try to help them, steer them in a better direction to make better choices.
Give me an idea of some of the ways. Can you give me, I know there's many, can you give me an example of steering, you know, how money is spent to steer kids in the right direction?
Through the years, there are many examples of this. Through the years, one of the examples would be like a holdover site. So a child who gets themselves into trouble, a holdover site would be a safe location that's not secured, but there's supervision provided there until we can reach the parents and the parents can come take account for their child and get their child back into the home where they're supposed to be. A child who runs away or a child who's skipping school, something like that. So you have adult supervision and the kid doesn't get themselves into further trouble.
Right.
And that's a quick and easy way to take care, to nip a problem before it becomes a bigger problem.
How big is school attendance?
School attendance is a huge factor.
Okay.
I mean, kids who are skipping school are not always making great choices when they're skipping school. So that is something that in South Dakota we take that seriously, that we want children to be in school. That's the best place for them.
How big of a problem is it in South Dakota?
We changed the law several years ago to say that there would be mandatory school attendance till the age of 18. And that creates problems of its own when you have children who don't wish to be in school.
Right.
So we work closely. I mean, we work in the state of South Dakota where we talk with the teachers and the counselors as well about the best ways to manage those situations. But, I mean, ideally, children are in school and doing what they're supposed to do, working towards graduation so that they have the opportunity to go on and be productive members of society. Right. That's the goal.
There's a lot of interesting stuff we could talk about here, but you just came back from Hawaii.
I did.
And I feel like we should talk about that because the University of Sioux Falls has been quiet as all the kids are off for J-term. Mm-hmm. And some of those students were with you soaking up the rays and doing some learning. Tell me why Hawaii and what was the goal of taking students there?
Hawaii is a destination where I have taken students for the past, I think, 14 years. I believe it's 14 years. And I love Hawaii. My family grew up, my family attended graduate school. It's a very long story. We have a long time connection.
Yeah.
Long time connection. And many of my family members have actually lived in Hawaii or attended school in Hawaii. So it's a place that we love and know very well. And island culture, a lot of people don't have the opportunity to go to Hawaii. Mm-hmm. It's really fun to take students and watch them fall in love with the place. The culture is very different, and it's obviously warm. That doesn't hurt matters.
Right.
But to watch them experience an island when we live with all of this land around us, you know,
right.
And just to experience the ocean, In part of their job is to experience the ocean every single day.
Oh, well, that's not so bad.
No, it's not. We were there for the missile stuff when all of the missile stuff went, so that added some additional dimension of adventure to our trip.
We were just talking about that. Tell me what that experience was like. Where were you physically? Were you as a group together?
We were doing our job, which was in the morning. They're supposed to get out and enjoy the beach and enjoy sunrise before we started our class activities. So actually, it couldn't have been worse. We were all spread out.
Right.
I had students up on a hike, several student groups that were up on a hike up above the beach watching the sunrise. I had some who were on the beach. I had one student who was sick and at urgent care, people getting coffee. They were just spread out. And so when that alert came, we had to scramble pretty quickly just to round everybody up, get everybody back to the houses. And without really knowing what was going on, I don't think it's great when your main source of information is Twitter. And we had the Hawaii Emergency Management information coming across the television, and the warning had come to our phones. But then it was very difficult to know what was real, what was happening, the timing of all of it. And it was terrifying. It was really terrifying.
So nobody around you, there wasn't a big law enforcement presence or a big, nobody was telling you that it was okay. You pretty much were tied to cell phone communication at that point
cell
to
phone.
Find out what was happening?
Yeah.
And you were getting wrong information.
Well, what we heard, we had the notice to our phone that said ballistic missile inbound for Hawaii. This is not a drill. Everybody got that. And then the TV switched over to that emergency broadcast message, which said something along the lines of Pacific Command has detected an inbound missile. The missile will impact land or sea within minutes. Take shelter immediately. And it kept saying that over and over and over. That's the information we had to go with. So we scrambled, got the students together. A lot of the students were calling home. And that, I mean, it's very frightening.
Well, yeah, right.
Very, very frightening.
So you don't, a huge military presence in Hawaii. You didn't see the Marine Corps pulling down the street in Humvees.
No, there was no time for that.
It's just a ghost town as people run and scream. And that's awful. How did you help your students process it, not only when it was happening so fast, but afterwards?
We spent a lot of time talking about it, and one of the things that was interesting is that we experienced that together as a group, and that's the people back in South Dakota, Iowa, Minnesota, really didn't know about it till it was over. Unless you got a phone call from a student that morning, you didn't know what was going on. And so many people here thought that wasn't a big deal, and that's a little hard for students to deal with because it was extremely traumatic. It was 38 minutes from the time that we got the first notice till Hawaii Emergency Management let us know that it was a false alarm. And so 38 minutes of confronting your mortality and being terrified that this missile is going to hit somewhere near, that's something to contend with. But I'm really proud of the people, the chaperones, the supervisors on the trip, and I'm proud of how the students stepped up and looked out for each other. We're a strong group. USF is a small school, and we had already formed some pretty strong bonds before that point, and I do think that will just be a moment that forges a lifelong bond for many of them.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was frightening, it was awful, but it's also a life-changing thing that you can make a good thing if you choose to make it that.
Our conversation before you joined us in the studio here was about this immorality of the software design and how things, the consequences of really a mistake like that, not only from the operator's perspective, but from the software engineer's perspective. Most of the lessons and takeaways you and your students have, though, are on the level of humanity.
I would say absolutely, yeah. And what the students, many of them, said the next day was they just won't take a sunrise for granted.
Mm.
We had those moments where we didn't know if we would see our loved ones again. It was important to reach out and make sure that people knew that we cared about them and that we loved them. But we were there together going through it, and we all felt like, all right, here we're okay, and we will make sure that we don't take this for granted ever again. And so it's hard to explain what that did for the humanity of the group, but that part of it was a good thing.
Did any of your students express fear or residual hesitation to travel, to be away from their loved ones, to take themselves on an adventure? Did anyone struggle with that?
Before we left, you mean?
No,
after
that moment where, you had a little anxiety before you got on the plane in the first place, and then boom, this happens.
I don't think so. I think they pretty well had processed through at that point. USF did arrange for some counseling as students returned, just because that is an extremely traumatic event. But as far as for the first 2 days, I would say, after it happened, I think most of us were sort of apprehensive anytime we got an alert to our phones, because right. that's how the whole thing started, was with a phone alert, a text alert. Some of them were with planes flying in the sky and things like that were, a little bit antsy. But we managed, it's really strange to have that really powerful moment where you don't know what's going to happen, and then to just switch over to, okay, now it's time for our luau. And go on with our day. So very surreal. It was a very surreal experience.
Beth O'Toole, we have so much more to talk with you about, but boy, that time went quickly. So we're going to invite you back to have more conversations about some of the other work that you do in the community. Okay. Will you come back to us again?
I would love to. Thank you very much for having me.